This episode of the Topcast is proudly supported by Forte.
For the last 3 or 4 years, it really, there's too much competition. Everybody's doing camps now. So for my parents, what I did is I just kept the schedule the same during June and July, offering 8 weeks. But what I do is I use my piano camp themes for our regular lessons. And then for those students who are traveling out of the country or doing whatever and they can't be here, I let them join online. And I also create a virtual piano studio on my website where they can watch a video of me teaching and they can stay on track with everything that we're doing if they want to.
Tim Topham here, and welcome back to the Topcast from Top Music Co. This is episode number 294, where we'll be discussing everything to do with group teaching with three very special guests today. But before that, I wanted to share with you some progress one of our members has made in just a really short amount of time. Rachel shared this story with us, and I just had to share it with you guys as well. Last spring, I ended my 10th year of teaching feeling burnt out and hating every minute of my teaching. I loved my students, but I hated their lessons. 3 years ago, I opened a new studio after making an international move. Since I was not accustomed to the exam system, nor did I want to be involved with it, I was told I was not a serious teacher. For the last 3 years, I've been fighting to prove myself and to everyone around me that I'm a serious teacher, and as a result, it was killing my teaching. I didn't feel I was allowed to be creative or act on all of the crazy ideas I had in my head because, let's be real, they were crazy and not serious, in inverted commas. In a last-ditched effort to keep from closing up my studio forever, I became a Top Music member in June and started dabbling in a course on group lessons. I became straight-up addicted to the courses, podcasts, etc., and found myself stripping down my entire studio structure and rebuilding from the ground up. Over the last few months, I've come to realize that I'm a very capable teacher who has a unique skill of creativity and an out-of-the-box mentality. I'm one of the only teachers in my town that works outside the exam system and follows a modern teaching philosophy. I've got a corner on the piano teaching market that I never realized, and the potential to grow and meet my dreams is so tangible. So in 3 weeks, I will begin my 11th year of teaching. I initially had planned to go slow and try one group lesson, but the demand was so high and I couldn't say no. I left spring of 2022 with 8 students, and I'm barreling into fall of 2022 with 28, and the requests keep coming. I've hired a second teacher to teach private and mobile lessons so that I can focus on doing what I love and mainly teaching group lessons. I've increased my prices, hired a graphic designer to create a logo, and I'm putting in place a plan to open my own external music school in 5 years. When I let myself stop and think about it all, I start getting scared out of my boots, but I keep telling myself that this is me and I've got this. I finally found my people and the freedom to embrace my own uniqueness. Huge success, in capitals. Thanks to Tim, the team, and this community for being a part of that. What a story. From almost quitting to absolutely killing it. Rachel is actually going to come on the show in episode 301 to share all about how that actually happened, what she was feeling, what the new dream for the studio is, and how potentially she could give you some advice and support, tips and strategies in order to do the same thing yourself, particularly if you're feeling like that in your own studio. And we all have times when we do feel a little bit like that, a bit drained, a bit tired, a bit overwhelmed. Hopefully those of you in the Northern Hemisphere heading into a new school season are feeling all re-energized and refocused. But if you're not, then make sure you tune into that episode. It's coming up in about 6 shows. I can't wait to unpack that with you and with Rachel live on the call. If you've got any questions or anything you'd like to ask her, then please let us know over at support@topmusic.co. All right, let's jump into today's show with three very special guests. We have Marie Lee, Melanie Bowes, and Dorla Aparicio, who are all group teaching specialists in their own rights. And what I did is, because we were getting more and more questions about group teaching over the northern summer, as people were preparing their studios to relaunch, I ran a Facebook Live, actually, no, it was a Zoom live call with these three and asked anyone to ask questions. And we took questions live, and we also took questions that were pre-submitted. So Some of the points that we will be covering in today's podcast, which is a rebroadcast of the audio from that Zoom session, is questions like, how do you place kids in group settings? Do you base them on age or level or something else? How do you set fees for group lessons? How do you structure and format the lessons? How do you set goals? Also, the best ways to charge, because a number of teachers have said they're not charging enough. Should I charge more? Is it a percentage of my usual fee? How does all that work? So we're going to answer that question. Ideas for multi-level repertoire would be super handy. And a question about group lessons online, which is a doable, possible thing that at least one of our guests today are doing. And she can tell you all about how they work too. And we do dive into that whole idea of multi-level teaching, because I know that's a question lots of people have. There's a lot of benefits for having multi-ages and levels in one group, and we'll unpack why that is shortly, but it's not the only way to do it. There is, in fact, quite a few different modes and methods of group teaching, from groups where everyone's at different stages and everyone wears headphones for most of the time, to groups where everyone is at the same level or very similar level and we're all playing out loud. Ensemble playing is the norm. There's groups of 8 students, there's groups with 2 students, there's groups that have parents in the room, groups that don't have parents in the room. There is all sorts of different ways that you can structure group lessons. And we also answer that question about, you know, where do you actually start? Should you start with suddenly buying 8 keyboards and jumping in with 8 kids in a room? Well, the answer to that one is no. What should you do instead? We'll dive into that today. So on with our live Q&A from our Zoom conversation a couple of weeks ago with Marie, Melanie, and Dorla. I'm Tim Topham, for those of you who haven't met me, from Top Music, and I really wanted to capture this opportunity to talk about group teaching right now because it's a bit of a hot topic, and it has been in the past, and then it kind of went a bit quieter again, and now it seems to have really taken off in all the questions that we're getting. And I think it's a tribute to you three amazing women, because you did a conference just recently, an online conference called Group Illuminated, all about group teaching, and it went really, really well. So we might be able to talk about that later on. But why don't we start with a quick introduction from each of you, just letting us know where you are and your kind of perhaps your specialty and what your studio is a little bit like. Should we start with you, Marie?
Sure. Hi, I'm Marie Lee. I'm from Las Vegas. I've been teaching group piano for about 18 years. I was a private teacher before. And funny story, one of the moms that said, you need to check out group teaching was one of them. She's actually one of the moms of my students, private students. And she didn't end up signing up, which is kind of funny. But it ended up being the thing that I absolutely love. I've got my own school here. I rent space from a music store, a piano store, and 130 students. So excited to see you. Thanks.
Amazing. Dorla.
Hello, my name is Dorla Aparicio. I live in Texas, south of the Dallas-Fort Worth area. I have been teaching here for over 30 years. I also got started as a private piano teacher. And the last 30 years, I've been teaching both private and group. And I have a boutique studio, 50 students, and 10 of those are private. The rest are in group.
Thank you, Dorla. Lovely to have you here. And we've got a podcast episode coming up about this when we dive deeper into all the great things that you're doing. Melanie, one of our inner circle or top music experts, welcome.
Hi there. Yeah, my name's Melanie Bowes. I'm from the UK, just south of London. I've been teaching for 20 years, but started off actually as a school classroom teacher. And then moved into group piano about 6 years ago. And I've created a program called Keynotes Music.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much, Melanie. We've literally got people from every different continent and time zone almost here. I can see Paul's joined us. G'day, Paul, BJ, James, Karen, Leah, Sarah. If you guys have any questions at any stage, please either put up your hand or add a note in the chat. We'd love to get some of your questions answered. But we also had some prior submissions of questions. So they're the ones I thought we'd get to first, and then we'll answer ones in the group here today as well when we can. So the questions seem to hover around. We've got a question about online group teaching and how on earth that's even possible. I wondered the same thing. Multi-level teaching, so how you can successfully teach multiple people of different ages and abilities in one room at one time. And then things like hourly rates and how you charge. So I might actually start there if that's all right. Beck Stewart asked, she said, I've had events where I've charged my hourly rate divided by the number of students, but then some students didn't commit, so I earned less than private teaching, and other events where families didn't want to commit because I was charging too much. So let's talk about pricing for group lessons. More, less, the same as your hourly rate. Should we start with Marie?
I would say the same. There are so many different benefits that you do not get from a private studio. And there's nothing wrong with private lessons because that's all how we learned. And I think it really does come back to what the parent's goal is for their child. If their goal is to become a concert pianist, I tell my parents right then, this is not the place for you. If you want a child that's going to love music the rest of their lives, this is where you need to start. I always offer the first lesson for free too, because I want to get him in the door. And I know, and this is something that I probably everybody has seen this one. If you can get them in the door, they stay, they sign up. So 99% of the time they will stay, but you've got to get them in the door. So I have no problem offering one for free, but yes, you charge exactly what you're worth. Cause it takes a lot more like setup. You've got to buy more pianos. You've got to have just the space to be able to offer that. So I would definitely price just as much, maybe even a bit more, but, and sometimes too, I think we've talked about this, is that a higher price to people means maybe better quality. So there's nothing wrong with that. Don't be too cheap.
Thank you. Melanie, what's your thoughts?
My thoughts are that I teach 8 students per half an hour. And so the rate that I charge is less than what a private rate would be for the parent. But my income is way higher than what I would be earning if I was just teaching one-to-one. So to my mind, everyone's a winner. I do 3-week trials, but as Marie says, I have 100% sign up from that 3-week trial. And I do charge for it because I was finding that with free trials, sometimes they weren't turning up and then wasting your time. And if you've only got a certain number of spaces in your group, you need to be sure that everyone's going to be there. So by having them pay up front for that trial, you know they're going to be there.
Thank you. So just for someone who's thinking about pricing this, let's say they're just starting out a group of 2 students and they were charging, should we keep it simple, round figures, $100 an hour. That's doing pretty well, perhaps in some areas. How would you break that down for the parent? So if you were charging $100 to see 1 student for 1 hour and now you've got 2, what might you do, Melanie?
Well, I wouldn't see 1 student for 1 hour. So
okay, for half an hour, $50 for half an hour then.
Okay, $50 for half an hour. I mean, I would, a lot of people say kind of 60, 65%, but if you've only got 2 people, then that's not, it's actually going to be way more than that. So with 2, I wouldn't teach a group of 2. I'd only do 8. So maybe you want to pass that question on to someone else.
Dorla, we haven't asked you. Have you got any thoughts on this as well?
I do. I would say first, you need to think about what your expenses are going to be and then how much money you want to make and then decide on your price. So I charge the same for, just like Marie, my private 30-minute lessons are the same price as a group for 60 minutes. But I priced it that way because I figured out how much I need to make per hour to keep the studio running. Mm. So I wouldn't break it down depending on how many students are in the class. Sometimes I only have 2 or 3 in the class. But because I have priced it to where I know how much I need to make per hour, having 2 students is okay for me.
Okay, let's go on to placing kids in a group setting. So it seems that you've got 2 schools of thought here. One is you have multi-age groups, and Dorla, I'll ask you about those, or multi-level groups, we should say, or you can put them in cohorts of the same skill level, which will often mean the same age, but not always, I guess. What advice would you say here? Should we start with Melanie?
Yeah, so I would have beginners by age, because your 4 and 5-year-olds are going to have very different needs and need to kind of have shorter activities, different activities than your older children. So I go 4 to 5 for beginners. And then I do 6 to 9 or 10. And then I do older beginners and adults. So those are like the beginner programs. But of course, with music learning, it's not really age-based, it's stage-based, isn't it? Once they get past those beginner stages, they're progressing according to their skills and their understanding of concepts, etc. So I start them in age as beginners, but then the ages are relevant as they build their skills.
Is that your approach, Marie?
Yeah, right on. Yeah, absolutely. And I'll tell you what, if you're starting, that's Melanie's story. The best place to start is actually with beginners that are not transfer students. You start them fresh and by age, just like Melanie said. And then I'm always on the lookout. I'm lucky because I've been doing this a while and I have a lot of classes. So if I see a child that is progressing a little bit faster, I know that will probably come up where people are like, what do you do with a kid that's progressing faster? I have places where I can put them. I have another class. So I do the same level teaching, unlike Dorla, which does multi-level, which leaves a whole lot more options for that. But if I see a child a little faster, I'll move them in here. If I see a child maybe, and I'm not going to say slower because we can all learn piano, but maybe one that doesn't put in the effort as much as another, then I try and group my kids kind of according to mentality levels. Is that a good word?
Like commitment levels.
Yeah, I don't know. Commitment levels. Thank you. If I've got like the go-getter class, I want that class together. And so I can move kids around and I'm always doing that. But I have the flexibility of doing that. I realize not everybody does that either.
Well, I feel lucky because Dorla and I got to catch up with a podcast recording not long ago. So I know a little about the multi-level grouping that Dorla does. And I know that one of the advantages of that is that you don't have to shift kids between groups. So if they're making great friends in one group and they get really good, they don't have to move out of that group. So Dorla, can you tell us, and sorry, you're probably sick of explaining this, but I know so many people are interested. How do you teach these multi-level groups of kids?
Marie and Melanie are very blessed to have such an amount of 100 students. I have half of that. So I don't have a place to move them to. So I had to figure out a way to be able to allow them to move up to another level if they needed to, but within the same class. So I also have my beginners ages 4 to 7 in their same age grouping. Because as Melanie said, there's specific things that they need to do and they're not as independent. But once they are 8, between ages 8 to 11, I will group them together, and 11 to 14. And within those ages, I have beginner to early intermediate, that they can be in the same class. And if they are more committed, then they can move to the next level, but stay in the same class. And I do that with ensemble-based pieces.
So, and I think I'm right in saying that in all your group settings, there's lots of music playing out loud. Would that be a fair statement? Because there's obviously that other option, which we hear about, which is headphones on, and you're teaching, you're effectively teaching individual students in one room at the same time. But that's a completely different situation to what we're talking about today. Have any of you experienced that, or do you have any thoughts on the sort of key benefits one to the other?
I think making music together has to be the key benefit for this collaborative setting that we're talking about here. And I think when you talk about the benefits of groups, you are really talking about the social learning, the peer motivation, but also just coming down to the music and the fact that when children or adults make music with other people, they get a very joyful experience, and it's very impactful and meaningful for them. So if we can arrange our classes so that they are learning together and they're playing together, I think that's where we get the most benefit from group classes.
Mm. It's where they have the most fun too, right?
And we can take a huge lesson from like bands, like marching bands, that these kids are friends for life. My brothers and sisters all did marching band. And it's like, that's what we are. What we're trying to build a piano band. And these are kids that are friends for life and they keep playing for life.
We've got a question from Sarah in the chat. You guys may be able to see that. Do you get to the point where a student is progressing so fast and showing promise that you have to struggle suggest that they change to one-on-one, or if you only teach groups, to move them to a teacher who will take them on? Does this happen often, and how do you approach this? I'm only teaching one-on-one with many who like to aim for exams, so I can do this switch eventually.
So if I have a student that is going beyond the early intermediate level, then yes, I will invite them to go into private lessons. That's what my private lessons are for those students who are progressing on their own and are very independent and very committed. So I would not, you know, keep them in the group.
Oh, I have a teacher friend. I just thought about this. I think this would be the ideal. And she pulled it off because she had a smaller base of students, but she had these really committed students, and she taught everybody got a private lesson once a week, and they got a group class once a week. And I think that would be ideal, but very few of us have the space or the time to do that. But yeah, there's benefits to both. If you could put them both together, that would be awesome. And then you could do that, Sarah, you could move as fast or as slow as they want during their private lesson, and then use their group class for the ensemble material.
I know we've got Paul Myatt in the group as well. Paul, if you could just unmute for a second, Paul, because you teach exam groups in Australia here, right up to higher grades, 4 or 5 in a room together, and they go for their exam at the same time. Is that right?
That's correct. Yes. And it's all about taking them together. And exactly what Marie said, they are friends and they work together. So the thing about exam levels, I've got 7 classes at the moment from grade 2 to grade 8. So I've got 4 kids in my grade 8 class, which is fairly high level. And they have a private lesson as well. So they're private and class. But up to about grade 4 or 5, they just have class lessons, the occasional private lesson for final technique. But they all work together and they tend to stay together. I think someone was saying it's great to have classes that you can move them ahead to. It makes such a difference.
Thanks, Paul. Appreciate that. Sarah, I hope that's answered your questions. Let me know if you've got any follow-ups to that one. It's a great question as well. One of the other questions that has come up a bit is formatting the lessons. Now, I guess, and Rebecca Penner asked this over on their Facebook group, I assume she means the structure of the actual lesson. Do you all tend to have a fairly structured lesson plan with an ensemble activity to start, some oral activities at the beginning, sight reading, that sort of thing? Or is it really quite mixed? Like we would do perhaps, I guess any teacher will either have a really structured format or be quite free as well. Marie, any thoughts on that?
I do. I actually, I kind of plot out my outline for the year. And we don't do exams, but we do festivals here, which is a lighter version of that. And so our students are working toward a solo festival where they play in front of judges, and then also ensemble festival. So that takes a lot of my curriculum, and I group it into what we need to get ready for those. As I'm planning those. And then, yeah, I'm trying to get, you know, some improvisation and some technique, theory work, rhythm work. And so I always have more on my lesson plan than I will ever get to. That's a good place to start. Just have way more than you'll ever get to, and then you won't run out. But yeah, we're working towards those things. And so I have, like I said, the huge outline for the year of what we need to get to and what we need to get accomplished. But I always leave some wiggle room, and not everybody likes or is comfortable with this, but I mentioned this at one of our group illuminated chats. It's like when Bruno, we don't talk about Bruno, comes along, I'm not going to wait. We're going to teach it right then, because it's hot, it's fun, and the kids want to do it. So I do leave a little bit of wiggle room. I feel better with that. But some people need it a little more structured, and there's nothing wrong with that either.
I learned as a classroom teacher, always good to have too many activities planned than not enough. It's the same. It's a group format in the same way. Melanie or Dawla, any thoughts on that question?
Yeah, I think that you do need a kind of consistent structure from week to week, because the kids need to know what to expect. Once they do and their expectations are met, they are then in their sweet spot for learning, because if it's chaotic and unplanned, and then they will be chaotic and a bit frantic. So a really clear structure that's consistent from week to week is really good. And obviously changing up the content each week so that it's progressive. I have like really clear learning objectives for each lesson, what the skills we're going to learn, how are they going to show me that they've learnt it? So evidencing, how am I going to monitor and give feedback? And what's the actual content going to be to achieve those learning objectives?
Thanks, Melanie. Dawla, anything else to add?
Well, I do the same. I plan my whole semester, sometimes my whole year, 32 weeks. And I plan specific ensemble pieces. I plan specific solo pieces. And then I leave room for assessments and for those fun pieces also.
Now, I want to mention just a quick interlude because, James, you've asked a question about online lessons, and we had a couple of questions about online. So I want to get to that in just a moment. But one of the things that we were lucky enough to have happened to us last year is we were able to take on the Upbeat Piano Teachers resources. And one of the lessons in here, one of the workshops that they put together, was this Group Lessons 101. And I wanted to give this to everyone on the call right now. It's listed as $69, but if you just click on the processing sign, so just go to upbeatpianoteachers.com, click on that, and then add coupon code group fun and apply, that will be reduced to free. So we'd love to give that away. And if you're not familiar with the Upbeat Piano Teachers, this was Tracy Selly and Sarah Campbell, who were interviewing lots of people all about all the different aspects of group teaching. In fact, Marie, I think you were featured. Would that be right?
I am, yeah.
Yeah, Dawla maybe as well, I think.
I think so.
Yeah. I'm trying to see. I can't jump in right now. Sarah, Daniel McFarlane, Carol, Susan Parody, Gary Gibson. Lots of great names anyway. But that's all free. If you want to go and grab it, please jump over there at upbeatpianoteachers.com. All right, so let's get to the group teaching question. James in the chat has asked a question. Sorry, online group. So, and I know, Dawla, you are still teaching this way. I think Marie and Melanie, we could say that we all did some group online lessons. Just before I get to Dawla with some details, Marie and Melanie, are you guys still doing any online teaching?
I only do somebody's sick. Yeah, and not even that. I just, you know, people ask if they can join a class online, and it's just too difficult. So I'm using Tonara. If there's kids really that cannot come in, I just do some videos at home and share them that way too. But yeah, online, I'm glad we tried it. We know that we can do it, but not my favorite. It was a lot of work, as everybody knows.
Melanie, did you feel the same?
I think there is some wonderful things about online teaching, and I have enormous respect for people that want to, you know, teach in this way. And I think it opens up their lessons and their teaching expertise to so many more people, you know, potentially. I think you need to definitely set it up so that it's engaging enough for children at home. The thing that I missed most when I was teaching online, of course, is the ensemble playing. And the lack of being able to do that. But having said which, I think we were online for two terms in the end, the kids made really good progress. So I wasn't grumbling about that at all. And whether that was because the parents are sitting with them, I was saying, like, if you've done it this way, this is how you can do it, because I give different challenge levels out. And the parents were like, oh, okay, this is how it works. And so they were kind of really supporting their kids, because they want, if there's any element of competition, they wanted their kids to up level. And so I found that actually the kids made really good progress, but I missed them a lot, you know. But that's just me and the way that I am. Some people love teaching online, so.
Forte is a free alternative to Zoom, purpose-built for music teachers. Forte puts you and your teaching style at the center of the educational experience. In particular, Forte offers industry-leading audio quality. This is what Zoom sounds like. Now listen to the same music recorded on Forte using the same equipment. Our mission is to empower teachers to do their best teaching online. Sign up for free and start teaching your students on Forte today. Just go to fortelessons.com. That's FORTELESSONS.com.
Dawla, tell us, how do you go about online group lessons?
Well, just like Marie and Melanie, I do not like teaching group piano online or piano at all online, but I do it. And I do a lot of hybrid lessons. I have many families that are further, like an hour away, and they can't always be here. So before I was trying to do all these different things and trying different platforms, and I had to just streamline and make it easy, because sometimes there's emergencies and we have to lock down the studio and be only online. Like when I was in contact with someone that had COVID, or there was a shooting a mile away and the parents were concerned about coming, we had to just be online. So what I do is I use Zoom because it's easy. I'm already used to it. I don't want to learn something new. And it works fine. Everybody knows how to use it. So I use Zoom. And then the format for my lesson stays the same. The only thing I modify is the game and my games are all very simple because I don't want to have to deal with internet issues. So, you know, flashcards, dice, that type of thing. Then in order to play together, we know that is not possible. So what I do is just, you know, everyone's muted and they play with me. They're playing a duet with me. No one's complained. Parents don't complain about it. The kids don't, because they're playing with me. They hear me. And then we take turns doing that. Or they can be the leader of the whole group. So there's different things that we can do. But the most important thing is that I leave my format the same and I make it easy for me to be able to have the lesson. I saw, James, that you also asked how many students to have online. And I had a class with 6, and that was the wrong decision. So 4, I think 4, maybe 5 is ideal. But 6 or more, it didn't work for me.
I think it's good too. Go on, Melanie.
Sorry, I was going to say, I carried on with my 8 and that worked fine. So just, you know, for another perspective, yeah, it's...
It just depends on how you go about managing it, I guess, and how much pressure you want to put yourself under, perhaps. Dawla, I love that comment that you said. It's, you know, you can't play at the same time and hear both people at the same time. But if you play, or one person plays and everyone else mutes themselves, they can play in time with that person in their own space and it will sound okay to them. And I think that's a good thing to remember. So it's not impossible to play along. You just can't all play together in the same way that you can, obviously, with a live lesson. I hope that's helped answer that question. James, please let me know if you've got any follow-ups. Thanks, Dawla, for letting us know how that all works. I see Sarah's followed up with another question, this time more about school and holiday times. So she says, do you only manage to teach your regular groups during school time and no lessons during the school holidays, or are group workshops successful and popular during the school holidays? I certainly have heard lots of great stories of teachers who teach actually one-on-one predominantly, running group classes once a month or a few times a term as an added benefit for their students, extra income for them as well, of course. So I think that's the question that's being asked. So for you that run it all during school time, do you also do things on the holidays? Perhaps Marie to start?
Yeah, it's not optional. Sorry. We do summer piano. I do an abbreviated schedule. So, and I'm happy to share my schedule if anybody wants it, but I guarantee this many lessons during the school year. And then I guarantee 8 classes during June, July, and August. And so it's not every single week, but like I mentioned before, we're working toward Ensemble Festival, and that is typically here in October. And so that's my big reason that they need to be here, because they need to learn those pieces and be ready to put that in front of a judge when they get back and, you know, into school, and we combine parts. And so it is not optional. Now I do give, I'm super flexible with makeups, and because so many kids are traveling, if somebody can't make it one week, I already know that they can fit into another class. So that's another benefit of having a lot of classes. I have a couple of kids that leave for the whole summer. They are loaded and they get to travel to exotic locations, and I will do Zoom classes with them, or I'm meeting with some kids tomorrow that have been gone the whole summer privately. And so I'll do that. I'm not thrilled to do that, but if it keeps them in my studio and they're kids that I want to keep, then I'll work with that for summer. But summer regular, yeah, we all know we just need to be regular with piano. They lose too much. They lose way too much if you don't option do it. And so I don't do special workshops either. So I keep it really easy. We're just continuing with classes.
Melanie, I wonder if summertime's like the same as in Australia for the UK, where the summer camp thing is not a thing for us. So
no, and Sarah's in the UK. So I was going to say that's actually quite a different answer, really, in the sense that we don't have all this time off. We just have the 6 weeks, and people will go away, and it will be difficult to schedule groups. But I would suggest, and I know you've been doing this summer, Sarah, is to have like smaller workshops on a few days in a row. So that people know that they can commit to that week. Like even with my kids, if they go to a netball camp or a tennis camp, camps are growing here in the UK. I don't know about for you, Tim, but they are definitely growing here. And, you know, I know which weeks I'm going to be away and which weeks I'm going to be, my kids are going to be able to go into some activities. So instead of kind of getting them to do it right through the summer and like once a week for 6 weeks, I would suggest you run a summer camp basically just on a few days in 1 week, and then maybe a different one. And it can be like themed, it can have a topic. Yeah, that would be my suggestion, because we do have much shorter summer holidays here.
Mm. Dola, any thoughts on that?
I used to do piano camps every summer.
I found them on your website. You've got the most amazing collection. For anyone that wants to find summer camp ideas for group piano, my goodness, you have to go to Dola's website. We'll tell everyone your websites after this.
So, but for the last 3 or 4 years, there's too much competition. Everybody's doing camps now. So for my parents, what I did is I just kept the schedule the same during June and July, offering 8 weeks. But what I do is I use my piano camp themes for our regular lessons. And then for those students who are traveling out of the country or doing whatever and they can't be here, I let them join online, and I also create a virtual piano studio on my website where they can watch a video of me teaching, and they can stay on track with everything that we're doing if they want to.
I know your follow-up there, Sarah, and I did a podcast. I wish I could find the name of it, but you might be able to Google for it, about a summer camp in Australia that was run by a couple of teachers. They combined with a local art school and they did this great artistic creative program. So it is something that is done on a small basis. It hasn't got the same whole thing that it is in the United States. But interesting to hear what you said, Melanie, about the fact that that might be growing, which makes a bit of sense too. So before we get to our last couple of questions, I did want to ask about multi-level repertoire and some of your favorite resources. I think more generally would be great. But before that, a quick opportunity to let people know where they can find out more about you and connect with you, each of you. So Dola, where can people go? Because you also, we should mention too, you have your own multi-level group method called Piano Pyramid. Do you want to tell us briefly about that and where they can go to find out more?
You can go to missdorla.com, missdorla. And yes, I created Piano Pyramid for multi-level group piano. So this ensemble pieces that we use are for beginner to early intermediate. And so we all learn to play the same song together out loud. But if you think of your primer level songs in any primer level book, that same structure, the same sound is what you would have in Piano Pyramid, just that it will be combined with an early intermediate piece by any of the, you know, classical composers that we were used to teaching in a private lesson. So that's really how it works. So each level is playing something a little more difficult, but they can all be played together. And that's Piano Pyramid.
Great. Marie, where can people find out more about all the great things you're up to?
I'm musicalityschools@gmail.com, but I do have some resources. Leela Viss and I connected, and so I'm actually on her shop. I've written a book. Leela forced me to write a book called The Group Teaching Blueprint. She pushed me to get that one out there. So that's kind of all my experience. It's about 150 pages, but that's on Leela Viss. I think if you just hit shop, you can scroll down. Dorla, your camps, I think, are still on Leela's site as well. So yeah, she has a few places for us people that like to sell a few little things. So check out leelaviss.com, probably shop.
Fantastic. Thanks. And Melanie?
So my program is called Keynex Music, and it's specifically written for groups with the kind of differentiated learning included into the lesson plans, where you have, you know, even if you had a group of beginners, they're all going to be progressing at different rates from the very start, but we want to keep them on the same songs. So we have a plan for adding depth to each song so that they can kind of progress within each piece. And we also use cyclical curriculum structures to solve some of the problems that group teachers face. So the website is keynotes-music.com.
Thank you very much. So I want to get to two final questions after this, which is repertoire and resources. So repertoire for multi-levels, which Dorla might be able to make some suggestions on. And then more generally, some any other sort of final resources out there. So people watching, I'm going to check the chat on our other live streams and in here as well. So this is your last opportunity. If you do have any questions, please let us know. I also wanted to mention, of course, inside our Top Music Pro membership, this is actually the dashboard that you land on as a member coming in, giving us an update of what's actually coming up. But if I just click Academy at the top, this is where we keep all of our courses and resources. So let me give you a like 30-second look. I'm just going to click on the group teaching subject so you can see some of the resources that we have over here, including a whole ton of courses. In fact, one by Melanie right here. So if I click on group teaching, we've got about 38 resources in here, including some discounts, some masterminds, webinars, teaching demos. We have Melanie's course, which is all about the business of group teaching. Nicola recorded some really great lessons and courses actually on the various different ways that you can add more than one child in a lesson without necessarily calling it group. So buddies and pairs and lab time and 30-30s and these things. If you've heard of any of those other kinds of structures, then we've got a great course on that, which answers lots of those questions. And then we've got our Growing a Group Teaching Studio course, which Deborah Perez put together for us. Live teaching, playing in ensembles. That's Paul actually in action there, and Paul here as well. So we've got lots of resources to suit our group teaching community over in Top Music Pro. Just wanted to give you a quick look there. If you're interested in finding out more about that, topmusicpro.com. Okay, let's wrap up with that question, Dorla, perhaps, on the multi-level repertoire. Any suggestions there?
Well, I always tell teachers you can start with trios. There are many on Piano Pronto. Trios and duets, you can have them double up on duets. Also, Susan Staples Bell has been writing more and more multi-level piano ensembles. And then, of course, Piano Pyramid.
Thank you very much. That's great. Should we mention also Mayron and the work that she's done too? And I know she was a guest. She was your keynote speaker at your conference, and she came on my podcast probably 5 years ago or something now. And she's got some information at freepianomethod.com, I think is right. Melanie, any suggestions for either repertoire or resources other than keynotes, of course?
Well, I was going to say Susan Staples Bell as well. And Dorla, of course, has got some pieces on your website, haven't you, Dorla? And I've heard people talk about the ensembles on the Mayron Cole site as well. And obviously keynotes, but that's, you can't really dip into keynotes. It's a whole kind of teaching curriculum. So, but there are obviously ensembles there as well.
Mm. And Marie.
I know, I'm writing my list, and then a lot of them have been mentioned too. So yeah, do check out Mehrens because they're free. And that's what we used a million years ago. And they're still cute as can be. I have some fun ones on there that my kids still really like. Deborah Perez's piano band that's new is really fun. And she's got probably some of the best backing tracks I've ever heard. So check those out. If you haven't she rocks. Like, everybody loves the backing tracks. Even the adults, the teens, they're good.
Will Bailey is fantastic.
He is. And he has some things too as well. You've got to kind of dig for him, but he does have some ensembles as well. My adults have liked a lot of his stuff, and it might be like a membership, and then he's got backing tracks, but it's pretty reasonable. Melody Bober has some awesome trios, and I just know about those just because we do the National Federation of Music Clubs, and that's full of ideas for ensembles as well. It goes, I think, all the way up to maybe quintets, maybe. So that's just pull up one of their books, and they've got a ton of lists of just different ideas.
Thank you so much. Well, before I ask you for your final sort of comments or supportive suggestions for teachers who are watching and interested in this but may not have taken the leap yet, there was one other question that's come through on Facebook. No, on YouTube. Do any of you compose repertoire for the groups you teach? I think we've kind of covered that one. That is from Sailor Auntie. Whoever Sailor Auntie is, go back and have a look at the recording. All of these three ladies create amazing things for their group teaching resources. So any final comments? We'll just go through each of you quickly and then we'll wrap things up.
Well, I think that I've spoken to so many teachers who have some concerns before they start group. And my best advice is always just to get started, because once they do, they never look back, and these concerns are no longer concerns because they've got happy children, they're a happy teacher. And so that's kind of a big piece of advice, is just to get started. That's it. What I would say.
I like it. Mate, take the leap. Give it a shot. But you also don't have to go to 8 kids. You've got rooms of 8. Now, that's a lot, and that's an investment in instruments and things like that. You don't have to start with that many. You can start with 2 or 3. Just, you know, make a start somewhere.
Yes, you can start with 2 or 3 beginners at one piano and get your feet wet. Understand what it is you want to do with your group piano program, and then grow from there. You don't have to make a big spend of money or, you know, move all your studio around or do anything that big. You can just start small. Just find peers that will be able to guide you into what, you know, there's a lot of information out there nowadays. Very different from when Marie and I started. So, you know, ask for help and just get started.
It is the most fun you will ever have teaching. I love groups, and I love the energy that's in there, and I love the friendships that they make. There's just something about the energy. Making music is just a beautiful spiritual thing anyway, but when you can do it with other people, it just is that much more. But Jorla's right. You don't have to invent anything new. If I were to get started, and which I did, I went right to Mehren Cole's method, and it gave me the confidence. Everything was laid out, but pick a method, pick, you know, Keynotes or Jorla's or Mehren's, and just get something that has already been written. And then after a couple of years, you tweak it. And then if you want to add something in, then you do that. But I would just start with something that someone else has already written. Don't reinvent it. Get the confidence up, and then you can start to expand and bring in your own personality wherever you need to.
I read an article recently about the memories that I have as a child learning music and as a teenager. The only things I can remember that are good, so I've got some memories of recitals that didn't go well or exams or whatever it was, but the positive memories are all when I'm doing things with other people, when I'm accompanying a singer, or I'm playing in the band for the musical at the school or the orchestra or whatever it was. And I think that's really instructive to note, that the memories that you are all making in your group studios are ones that the kids will have for a very long time, hopefully for life. So thank you all so much for coming and chatting today. It's been so much fun and been a great opportunity to catch up. We don't do this often enough, and I hadn't seen Melanie and Marie for ages, and Dorla we've only just met in the last few months. So thanks again, and thank you to all of you out there who are watching on our streaming services and have been in the group today. Appreciate your questions. Good luck with your group teaching, and have a great rest of the week ahead. Thank you, everybody. Bye to Melanie, Dorla, and Marie. Thanks again, everyone.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Well, I hope you enjoyed that discussion about group teaching. If you do have any questions about it, we actually have a number of courses that I mentioned actually during the Q&A inside our Top Music Pro membership. We also have Melanie and Marie as two teachers who are inside our membership and happy to answer any questions that you might have. You've also got Dorla's resources that we talked about too. And if you want any other links to any of the things that we talked about, including that free group one-on-one course that I'm giving away, then head over to our show notes. That's over at topmusic.co/episode294. Next week on the podcast, we have another member spotlight, and we're going to be talking all about a topic which I've actually been surprised that I've realized that I've not covered before and probably should have, and that's synesthesia. And you'll enjoy hearing me stumble through trying to say that a number of times in next week's episode. We're going to be talking about it with a synesthete, Kelly Jenkins, one of our Top Music Pro members, who proposed this topic to me, actually. And I can't believe I hadn't actually unpacked it before. So you're going to work out whether any of your students have this ability and how you can use some of the aspects of this particular ability that some students have in your own teaching, even with students who don't have it. So we're going to unpack all about it and talk more about it next week. I hope you'll join me. It's Tim Topham here, and you've been listening to the Topcast. Look forward to speaking to you again next week. Bye-bye. For more information about this episode and to find out how to enhance your own teaching, visit topmusic.co. You'll find everything you need for your studio, from lesson plans to cheat sheets, quick win teaching ideas, and guides on how to build your teaching business. Plus, you'll be connected to a global community of the world's top music teachers. And when you're ready, join hundreds of other teachers around the world by becoming a Top Music Pro member and get access to all our bonus content and flagship courses. And don't forget to follow topmusic.co on social media and subscribe to this podcast wherever you listen to it. That's all for today. We'll see you in the studio.